Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, we obviously have very big news to react to. Arik Gilbert, the five-star tight end, formerly of LSU, formerly a big-time prospect in the 2020 recruiting class, was supposed to be transferring to Florida. He has now decided he doesn't want to do that. In fact, off the top of the program here, let me read to you the only thing we have by way of statement from Gilbert, this coming on Twitter, about his decision to no longer be a part of this. This is what Gilbert said on Twitter. In fact, you saw this story at DogNation.com yesterday. Great job by Connor Riley on the reporting of that. Gilbert kind of letting it be known that he's rethinking all of this, saying, "I've decided to decommit from the University of Florida and re-enter the transfer portal. I will not be announcing my final decision until I am enrolled into school and on campus." That is what Gilbert says. Let me just say one thing briefly on this, and I'm going to do more of this later on. There is a way in which some of this kind of stuff gets painted. I was on the SEC Country pages yesterday talking about this when it happened. This is not just Georgia fans. This is beyond all of that. There's this thing of Gilbert's a drama. You know, he's into drama. You know, he wants attention. This is typical entitled athlete. This is all of that. That's part of the way that Gilbert gets painted on this. I would suggest there's no evidence to prove that's true whatsoever. Yes, he did go to LSU. Turns out he was unhappy. Yes, he's changed his mind about going to Florida. But I take Gilbert at his word. I doubt we hear anything from him until he announces his new school whenever he does that. Just like we didn't really hear much from him along the way to choosing Florida. This is not a guy who seeks every piece of media attention he possibly get. The idea that he's in it for attention, in it for his own glory, things like that. I mean, listen, I don't know Gilbert personally. I can't say that one way or another, but the people act like this is, as it sometimes get described, as typical prima donna behavior from a elite recruit, you know, guy that comes to college with a big time pedigree behind him. There's very little evidence to support that whatsoever, so that's kind of my take on that. Now let me say one more thing here too, then I want to dive heavily into this. A lot of what you're going to hear over the course of the next couple of minutes is mostly just speculation, right? And I shouldn't say just speculation. Speculation is important when it comes to a topic as significant as this one is, but it's going to be a lot of speculation. However, before we're done on this subject and before John Stinchcomb comes on the program in a few minutes, there is something hard, fast, real, and tangible that we can say about the Arik Gilbert situation. So stay with me through the speculation, and eventually we'll arrive at what I believe for today should be the key takeaway that everybody's supposed to have. Are you with me on that? So that's what we'll do here coming up in just a moment. Now, obviously on the part of Georgia fans, there's a curiosity of, well, what does this mean for Georgia? It's fairly obvious what it means for Florida, the guy they thought they were getting, now they're not going to get. But what does this mean for Georgia? There is a chance this means nothing for UGA at all. But there's also a chance that maybe somehow Georgia still ends up being a part of this discussion before it's all said and done. Why do we have reason to potentially believe that? Let's go back to the Missouri game for a moment. Georgia had one of its best showings of the year. The offense really showed out, kind of a coming out party, if you will, for the Todd Monken offense. JT Daniels has a big day, some of that being delivered to freshman tight end Darnell Washington, who, as a member of the 2020 class himself, often drew comparisons to Arik Gilbert. So with Gilbert likely on his way out of LSU at the time, and folks seeing Darnell Washington being used heavily by Georgia there that day, there was a question about that. And the answer that Kirby Smart gave in relation to what Washington had done and the possibility that Gilbert could be on the move for LSU, boy, even though Smart doesn't say anything by Gilbert by name, he couldn't at the time, even though he doesn't say anything about Gilbert by name, there was certainly a thought of what Smart having said at the time certainly felt like a vague reference to what might eventually have with Arik Gilbert. So as a way of kind of reminding you of everything that's happened in the past, let me let you hear Kirby Smart on that right there.
Coach Monken really likes using multiple tight end sets. It's done a lot in the NFL. And if you can mismatch people and, you know, have ability to run the ball, but then also flex them out and throw the ball, it's really frustrating. You know, if you go back to that play, the corner went over, the safety had to play Darnell, and he's saying, wait a second now, I got a Darnell on a safety, and those guys don't cover for a living. You can never have enough good tight ends in the SEC because they're big, they're athletic, they can catch the ball. There's so many things they can do. So it's one of those things that we want as many as we can get, and we want to get them the ball.
We want as many playmaking tight ends as we can get, and we want to get them the ball. That is the kind of thing that Smart said that sort of felt like one of those subtweets of a Rick Gilbert. You can't mention Gilbert by name, but you're clearly talking about Gilbert while you're also talking about Darnell Washington. I would suggest that Kirby Smart's been pretty good at that, and it seems fairly easy to read into that from Smart, although clearly we don't know exactly what he was meaning. He hasn't expounded on that subject more, but there's a way of reading between the lines on what Kirby Smart says. Then there's this. Smart goes on the Atlanta radio station on 680 The Fan the night of the February National Signing Day at the beginning of this month. Georgia did not sign a player on the traditional February National Signing Day, kind of finishing second for Terry and Arnold, who chose Alabama. And so the question from the guys on the show that night for Kirby Smart was, well, what happens next here for the 2021 class? And Smart said something even more cryptic then than he said about tight ends for the Missouri game. A little bit more difficult to decipher. There was a lot that could potentially be pulled out of what Kirby Smart said, but it was clear that Smart seemed to have something on his mind. And what Smart said back at the beginning of this month on the Atlanta radio station 680 The Fan certainly seems more relevant now that Rick Gilbert is seemingly back on the open market again as a transfer away from LSU. Let me let you hear this. It's about a minute long. There was a lot to unpack from this. Take a listen.
Well, we're always actively looking. You know, as soon as a kid pops in, kid jumps in from a different place, we're always looking and investigating guys. And, you know, we're really slow to jump on something like that because, for us, we got to know that kid's going to be able to play right away and he's got to be able to help us and use it that way. So, you know, we'll look to see. I think at the end of some spring practices, you'll see some more movement in there when guys are coming out of spring to kind of see where they are on depth charts, and there'll be another movement of guys, and we'll be looking to get some guys. But we're also always looking at high school guys. You know, there's two or three scenarios that are out there that people aren't thinking outside the box that it'll be interesting to see if those play out. If you look back last year at this time and said, okay, if a kid was not signed, how did they end up at a place? You know, there's been reclassifications. There's been kids that announce where they're going out of the portal that they're not actually signed. You know, you don't actually sign until you enroll. So there's a lot of wiggle room left for a lot of these kids, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
So I'm not proud to admit this, but as the professional communicator that I hope to be, I think there's a chance that when we first heard this, talking about the royal we here, editorial we, maybe my talking about myself, I think I may have gravitated to the wrong part of that quote, at least it's a possibility. And as I said before, as the professional communicator, you never want to misread someone else's message. I think that Smart was trying to be intentionally vague, but when Smart mentioned, hey, still options left in the 2021 class, I think I kind of gravitated towards the idea of, well, is there a high schooler or a high school graduate that Smart still has his mind on? And we kind of, you know, talked about some of those ideas. At one point in time, some folks thought it might be Jamarian Gooch, the offensive lineman who ended up going to Missouri, or we talked about Dylan Brooks, who ended up going to Auburn. A lot of folks shopping off the Tennessee roster there for a while, it seemed like. We were kind of all over the place, kind of trying to grab, you know, what does Smart mean when he says the things that he's saying right there? But in light of the fact that a Rick Gilbert, who had announced his transfer from LSU to Florida, in light of the fact that now Gilbert's decided he doesn't want to go to Florida, it's actually the last part of what Kirby Smart said there that might have been the most interesting of all. So let me isolate just a few seconds of this and tell me if you think that what Smart said at the beginning of this month could somehow maybe have some relevance to the Rick Gilbert situation, now that Gilbert's not going to Florida. This is a very short version of that same Kirby Smart clip.
There's been kids that announce where they're going out of the portal that they're not actually signed. You know, you don't actually sign until you enroll. So there's a lot of wiggle room left for a lot of these kids, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
There are kids in the portal who you don't actually sign at that school until you enroll in those classes. And Rick Gilbert was not going to be at Florida until the end of this semester, was going to take some classes there at LSU, my understanding was. Is that a reference to a Rick Gilbert? Once again, we don't quite know, but certainly given the statement from the beginning of this month on 680 The Fan, the statement after the Missouri game, there is at least reason for Georgia fans to kind of stretch their legs and speculate a little bit, but the possibility that, yes, indeed, Georgia still wants to be in the Rick Gilbert business. But hold everything just for a moment. There is also the issue of the fact that this would be, whether you're Gilbert going from LSU to Florida, Gilbert going from LSU to Georgia, you want to bring Alabama in this discussion, you want to bring Tennessee into this discussion. We'll have more on that, you know, part of this, you know, before the show is done today. If you're talking about going from SEC school to SEC school, you still have the issue of, even if you have the one-time transfer rule adopted, seems like that's probably going to happen, what happens with those intra-conference transfers? Guys going from SEC school to SEC school. You'll remember, you know, Cade Mays leaves Georgia to go to Tennessee. Joey Gatewood leaves Auburn to go to Kentucky. Situations like that. Those guys were granted a special waiver last year because of the coronavirus, but that was supposed to be just kind of a one-time thing. In fact, in December, Smart kind of laid out his thought process on what the future of transfers are, including transfers within the SEC. And this is one of those factors that has to be considered, although it's admittedly a little less fun to think about.
I think that everybody's understanding is that the one-time transfer rule is going to hit. It's just a matter of when. And if that goes into effect August, then the kids that would have left in January would then possibly be eligible. But there's still a lot to be done on that in terms of, does that include interconference? Because it was a one-time thing. And I don't know, you know, which way that's headed in our conference. Certainly everybody has their opinion. And Sankey made a decision on that in terms of allowing guys to play. But what's that going to be moving forward in terms of inside our conference versus just all across the country?
So let me see if I can kind of sum up all of this here for the moment. We don't know if it's going to be a situation where a guy can leave one SEC school, go to another, and be immediately eligible. Whether there should be a kind of a way around this rule or not, we don't know what the future of that holds, at least for right now. We also don't know how significant Georgia's true interest in a Rick Gilbert is, although based on some of the cryptic things that Kirby Smart has said in the past, there is certainly reason for shows like this to speculate on the fact that Georgia would probably have interest in someone who I think is the potential of a huge, high-level, dynamic playmaker at the SEC level, no matter which school he ends up going to. So there's a lot about this Gilbert situation we do not know. However, there is one big thing about Gilbert that we definitely know, and I'll tell you about that coming up. But first, let me introduce the show. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch on video, podcast, all the platforms, Apple, Spotify, I believe we're on TuneIn, certainly on SoundCloud, posting the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We're on the radio at noon every single day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. However you get to us, just really appreciate you being a part of the program. And as I said before, to our video audience before the regular show began, to those of you on Facebook who are nice enough to share the show, to kind of get around the fact that we're not really getting those notifications sent out by Zuckerberg and the crew the way that we used to. Sheryl Sandberg, I believe, is a part of that group there as well. They're not really helping us out the way they once did. So for those of you who kind of want to help us out by sharing this show with your friends on Facebook, huge, huge way for us to make sure that we get this show in front of every Georgia fan who wants to be a part of it each and every day. And I really appreciate you for all of that. More on that, by the way, later on. For now, though, let me remind you, the Dog Nation Daily is presented today by our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. You know, Pella Window and Door of Georgia is a nationally known brand, which obviously means unparalleled resources, but also locally owned branch right here in Georgia, which means unrivaled service from a group of folks that really want to take good care of you when it comes to energy efficient windows and doors. Something that's really important. Some of you turn your air conditioning on this weekend because it was warm enough to do so. Well, when you do that, air conditioning is expensive. You don't want that stuff escaping out, you know, the crevices of windows and doors that haven't been properly cared for. That's why it's time to get in touch with my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia and let them know that you're ready to get the big upgrade that your house desperately deserves. They've also got great savings for you as well right now. Through April 1st, you can get 10% off an entire project or no payments, no interest for 12 months. Now, let me give you a very important piece of information when it comes to Pella. New website, new phone numbers for you to be aware of. Here's the website. It's PellaofGA.com/DogNation. If you're watching on video, you see that on your screen. PellaofGA.com/DogNation or relatively new phone number here as well, 678-638-1496. That's 678-638-1496. That'll get you in touch with Pella Window and Door of George. All right, before I get John Stinchcomb, let me do around the doghouse here for a moment. And as I said, there is a lot about the Gilbert situation that is speculation. Can he go to an SEC school and play right away? We don't know. How involved is George in any of this? For now, we don't know. What is Gilbert's thought process beyond the fact that he doesn't want to go to Florida? We don't know much about that either. However, there is one thing regarding Rick Gilbert that we can definitely know for sure. And as a way of setting this up, I want you to hear a clip that SEC Network analyst Cole Kubelik delivered when he was on the Paul Feinbaum show last week. You're going to hear Paul ask Kubelik about the situation in the SEC East. Now, I want you to listen to how clearly Kubelik, I can't say his name now. You know who I'm talking about. How clearly he articulates the case for Georgia there in the SEC East. And that's going to bring us to what I think is a pretty clear point regarding Gilbert and Florida. So here is Kubelik from the SEC Network on the Paul Feinbaum show, a lead in to something we can know for sure about the Gilbert situation. Take a listen to this.
What about the East, Cole?
I think it's Georgia's to lose, Paul. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure I see another team that really is going to be very close. Georgia's got the best defensive line in college football returning. I know there's holes in the secondary. Good, talented offensive line. Coach Luke will have those guys ready. Washington back at tight end. Big physical target that can help you do different things. You got all kind of weapons at wide receiver. With Burton and Pickens back, I think that group's going to be phenomenal. And now you know who your quarterback is. Last year it was, well, can we just get by with this walk-on? Are we waiting for our real starter to be healthy? Do we want to keep another quarterback on the roster? Now Coach Monken can go through this entire offseason knowing exactly who his guy is and exactly what that offense is going to look like. Paul, I might have Georgia as my number one team in college football right now heading into the season, and I'm not sure there's another team that's really going to be close to them in the East.
So first of all, I have such great sympathy for what Cole Kubelik is going through there. You hear the dog barking. At one point in time, there's a doorbell that rings. It seems like every time I try to get on like a sports radio interview of some kind, I have like 1,000 things going on at once. And I don't have a dog, so thankfully there's no dog barking. But the doorbell always rings. There's always something going on. People are actually trying to call me, which, you know, is always something to kind of deal with there. So I'm very sympathetic to Cole there in that situation. And many of you kind of deal with the same thing of, it may not be a sports radio interview, but it's your own personal conference call or, you know, Zoom meeting you're supposed to be a part of. It seems like right when that begins, you're trying to make a point. You got 1,000 things going on in the home there. You hear doorbell ringing in Kubelik's house. You hear the dog barking. I certainly feel sorry for him when he's dealing with that. However, don't pay attention to the fact that Cole Kubelik right there says that Georgia may be the very best team in the country. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not. For now, that's not that important for me. It's the last thing that you heard Cole Kubelik said there. He says, I see Georgia as the very best team in the East, and I'm not sure there's anybody in this division who's even close right now. That's a very bold, strong statement from Cole Kubelik. And it's important to note, when you think about what the Rick Gilbert story truly means, as we understand it right now, not knowing if Georgia's involved, not knowing if Gilbert's going to land somewhere else in the SEC, not knowing where he's going to go at all, we have very little clue about that. So if you want to sift through the unknowns for the Gilbert situation, here's the known situation that you arrive at. Florida desperately needed Gilbert just to stay close with Georgia, just to be within the kind of shouting distance of UGA as we understand these teams on paper before the season begins. And the fact that Rick Gilbert now says he's not going to Florida for whatever reason, he decides he doesn't want to be there, or for whatever reason this is, you know, not happening, for whatever that reason is, the fact that he's not going to Florida is a huge blow to the Gators. And I think whatever chance that Florida had to stay within shouting distance of Georgia in the SEC East has probably for the most part disappeared now that Rick Gilbert has decided he doesn't want to be at Florida. So for all the unknowns and for all the speculation that's going to go on with this, and yes, we will be part of that, for all the speculation about that, the one known that we should all pay attention to is this is a debilitating blow to Florida's chances of being competitive in the SEC East. We'll get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before that, let me do a quick shout out to my friends at Marlowe's Tavern. They got a great thing going on right now. I want to make sure you're aware of this. The Bayou and Bourbon event is going on right now. Great chance to get some of the great flavors, the Big Easy, New Orleans, of course, Mardi Gras, you know, all that great fun stuff that we kind of think of Louisiana for. A lot of those great tastes being celebrated right now at your local Marlowe's Tavern. Chef John Metz has carefully curated some menu items here to make it really, really fun. Of course, the bourbon cocktails and things like that they have going along with this, really great as well. Roasted chicken and shrimp gumbo on the menu right now. The New Orleans style po' boy, don't you know that's a lot of fun? The deconstructed jambalaya, honey bourbon bread pudding, great option for dessert. It's all there at your local Marlowe's Tavern. This is a ton of fun. You can go to marlowestavern.com to find out more about the tavern right there in your neighborhood, how they're celebrating the Bayou and Bourbon event, and really take advantage of what is just a great opportunity to have some fun with one of our great friends, the folks over there at Marlowe's Tavern. So we are very busy here, obviously, off the top of the program to kind of get more on everything that's going on with all of this and how this changes the outlook for the rest of the SEC. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, let's get ready to talk to our buddy John Stinchcomb.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
John, before we get into the serious stuff related to SEC, Georgia, and everything else, I played an audio clip of Cole Kublik from the SEC Network a moment ago on the Paul Feinbaum show, and you know, you obviously do sports interviews like this. You have business meetings you're part of. Doesn't it seem like every time you get ready to dive into one of these, that's when the dog starts barking, doorbell starts ringing, other people are calling you about things completely unrelated to whatever you're trying to do? It feels like in this sort of Zoom world that we live in, when we've been in now for a year, it seems like that's kind of always the way, I'm guessing, right?
It seems to be the case time and time again that as soon as you get on a Zoom call, that's when the kids are behind you, dad's needed, they start fighting, it's inevitable.
There does certainly seem to be some of that. So the big news around maybe involving Georgia, we'll find out more about that in the days to come, certainly involving the rest of the SEC, is that former five-star tight end Rick Gilbert, who announced earlier that he's planning on leaving LSU and announced at one point he was going to Florida, has now decided that he does not want to be at Florida. As I said before, we'll find out if Georgia's a factor in this discussion moving forward or not. We're not even sure he could be eligible this upcoming year in the SEC anyway, given the prohibition on intra-conference transfers and at least immediate eligibility for those transfers. So given what we know about this situation right now, what do you make of the story of someone who I think has rare talent being once again back on the open market?
I'm amazed. I mean, you're breaking news to me. I thought it was a big pickup for Florida. I think having Kyle Pitts as a recruiter or a recruiting tool and saying, here's what we can utilize, how we can utilize a tight end with high-end capabilities like a guy like Rick Gilbert. I thought that was kind of a nasty-looking marriage as a dog fan because Kyle Pitts was untouchable, and I think Gilbert's a guy that has some really high upside as a receiver and as a complete tight end. So to hear that he's not going to be at Florida, I think Georgia fans should be pretty ecstatic. Even if he doesn't end up in Athens, it's addition by subtraction because Florida was looking to add a pretty key piece, and they've proven, and Dan Mullen's proven, that he can write up plays and draw them up in a way that you can utilize some great talent at the tight end position.
Yeah, I think you and I are very much on the same page about this. I'm obviously as curious as anybody what happens next. I think soap operas like this in the SEC are pretty fun. So while we wait on the unknowns to play out, you just kind of touched on what I think is the true known in all of this is. It's a bad blow for Florida, given the fact there's no Kyle Pitts on this team anymore. There's no Kadarius Toney on this team anymore. There's no Kyle Trask, who was the quarterback who had great success a year ago. A lot of the things that you had come to expect from the Florida offense over the course of the 2020 season, a lot of that's gone for 2021. You're left to kind of wonder, what does Emory Jones bring to the quarterback position? Can he even hold off Anthony Richardson over the course of a full season there as the starting quarterback when it comes to all of that? And certainly when it comes to distributing the ball to playmakers, Gilbert was the guy that has more, I would say, cachet among casual SEC fans than anybody that's currently on the Florida roster. So we'll wait and find out who gets some good news on this. But there's no denying, John, this is bad news for Florida.
Oh, it's miserable. And I think they were, as Florida fans were as ecstatic as they were to add him, they've got to be equally as disappointed because, as you mentioned, they're losing so many pieces. And, you listen to the Cole Kubeliks of the world, and it's based primarily on what's returning and what the known commodities are. And Florida doesn't have many of those, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So when you feel like you've added a little wind to your sail with the Gilbert pickup and then you lose it, it's almost more disappointing as if he wasn't ever in the picture for them. So I think there's a reason why a lot of these pundits are out there saying that Georgia is the team to beat, and there's not really much competition in the East vying for that crown. Now, with that said, we just entered March. There's a lot of talk and speculation, and obviously nobody's played a single snap towards this 2021 season, but you look on paper, and Georgia's looking pretty good, especially for the East, if not more.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And John, when you mentioned that, I mean, to me, I always think about, obviously, Georgia fans are craving a national championship. I think the Georgia program itself, you know, craves that championship. But it's important to note that you can't skip steps along the way to that. That, you know, you've got to make sure you handle your business in the division. Now, obviously, Alabama in 2017 won a national championship without winning its division. But for the most part, that's not really the path that Georgia's going to be able expected to cross. So while Georgia fans would say, if they were to kind of peer in on this conversation right now, at least many of them would probably say, I'm not worried about winning the East. I want to win a national championship. Along the way to winning that national championship, you've got to take care of your business. And doing what you had in 2017, if this does open up the East and make the path in the division, you know, a little easier, certainly, than it's been the last couple of years, I just think it makes it more likely that Georgia's the kind of team come SEC Championship Saturday that has a chance of winning that game, because maybe it's less tax for having done so throughout the course of the regular season. And, you know, just in terms of being a perennial contender anyway, being able to handle your business in the division, I think is a way to be able to get that done. So along the way to winning a national championship, saying that you have a fairly clear path in your division, if that's what this Gilbert news does mean, I mean, there's some real value associated with that.
I think it's huge, and I agree. You know, it's the old adage that we're not looking past our next opponent. Well, if you're looking big picture, we're not looking past our division or side of the SEC before we start building. You know, you have to build the foundation before you put the roof on the house. So we have to win the SEC East. I think, you know, the anomaly was 2017, especially as competitive and as critical as national voters are of SEC teams entering in to the college football playoff series. You can't give them any reason to leave you out. And it starts at home. It starts with your side of the division. And quite honestly, with the schedule, the way it's set up, and the fact that Georgia has a lot of returning pieces and so many of the other divisional opponents do not, whether it's coaches or the playing talent, it sets up really well for Georgia to build momentum through the season and be, like you say, a little bit healthier, hopefully going in towards postseason play. But there's so much to be excited about this 2021 season. And, you know, hey, we're dog fans. We say it every time this year that, you know, this could be our year. But I think there's some pretty good reasons to feel optimistic about that very sentiment.
Let me ask you a question I think I know the answer to, but I'm actually still interested in hearing the way that you explain this. We heard some audio from Kirby Smart earlier in the show, going back to the Missouri postgame press conference, where Smart talked about the fact that Todd Monken, the Georgia offensive coordinator, and his NFL background, that he'd love to have multiple tight ends in the field, both capable of being dynamic playmakers, that's the kind of thing that NFL teams use really well. John, you were obviously a part of an NFL offense that had a great quarterback and a great offense, and frankly, I don't know how often you guys were using multiple tight ends. I'm not aware of that one way or another, but just in general, it seems like NFL teams are far more capable of, you know, successfully using tight ends than even the very best college offenses seem to be from time to time. From your perspective as a guy who's been in those offenses, and by the way, also caught a tackle eligible play.
I should have, BA.
Okay.
With my exceptional athleticism. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. You just saw me and you said, I bet that's a guy who should be eligible more often.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I think that maybe have something to do with that. The point is, you were part of a very good NFL offense. Why does it seem like these NFL teams do more effectively use tight ends than even sometimes the very best college offenses do?
Well, I think there's only a handful of guys that have the skill set to be threats both in the run game at the tight end position and also matchup nightmares as tight ends in the receiving game. And, you know, for the end of my tenure was kind of the emergence of Jimmy Graham and his prolific career, primarily with the Saints. But What matchup do you like there? I mean, he's 6'6", 6'7", runs like a deer, similar to a certain Georgia player who wears zero on his chest. So those matchups are, you know, are we going to try to match his speed and go with a smaller guy? Well, that's going to make us weak in the run game. And defensive coordinators are basing their call on the personnel groupings. So they don't know exactly where these tight ends are going to line up. Is it going to be in the slot? Is he going to be in line? Is there going to be two tight ends that get flexed out? Should we prepare for being stronger against an inside run and then kind of risk these matchups with, you know, with there's a lot of teams running this 3-4 schemes with these outside linebackers that are, you know, have good angles as pass rushers, but how are they in space? So it really becomes a matchup issue. And I think that's what NFL coordinators do exceptionally well, is they look at player profiles, they analyze the game to a level that is almost mind-numbing to know and recognize how much time they spend in creating specific situations to take advantage of mismatches. And, you know, it seems pretty simple as a fan that you just say, well, yeah, you get a tight end and you put him in space and he's got an advantage. Well, creating those opportunities is, I think, where they excel and they make it look easy. And it starts with having the talent to be able to create a mismatch in the first place. And when you have special guys that can play that tight end role, which is really like a hybrid offensive lineman or a hybrid wide receiver, you've blended the two, it really does put defenses in a difficult situation just to try to match up well.
Let me finish with this. You know, John, you and I have never really talked about this, but I'm guessing that if we were really kind of compare a lot of our opinions on the kind of the global college football discussion, I would say that we'd probably both kind of fall in the traditionalist category. We kind of like what college football has been, and I believe that certainly in my mind, I want to do what I can to kind of protect that for the future. I don't like too much radical change for the sport. I sort of gather that you're kind of in the same way on that. And so when you think about the Gilbert situation like this, there are some people who criticize this as, oh, this is too much drama, this is too much, you know, Gilbert just needs to make up his mind and stop dragging all this out. And what I would say about that, John, is that I don't really see anything that Gilbert has done here, whether it's, you know, choosing to go to LSU, deciding he doesn't want to be there, choosing to go to Florida, deciding he doesn't want to be in Florida. He hadn't enrolled there yet. Let's keep that in mind. That was just a commitment. I don't see anything in the Gilbert situation that seems too dramatic, at least in the part of Gilbert. I would suggest the people that are criticizing all of this, the problem they really have is the way that the transfer portal, the way that it's currently designed, opens the door for a lot of uncertainty about what rosters are going to look like. And so I think it's important for us to have this conversation. It's not Gilbert you have a problem with if you don't like the way this situation is playing out. It's actually the way the transfer portal is being utilized around college football. And if that's the discussion that we want to have, then let's have that discussion, John, I would say. But let's, in my mind, let's not blame Rick Gilbert for just utilizing the mechanism that seems to be in place for players. If you don't like the portal, in other words, that's fine. But I don't think this is a reason to hate Gilbert.
I totally agree. And I could see Georgia fans in that same situation. If the coin had been flipped and we are on the receiving end of a player, but man, now it looks like we're not, and you're going, this is frustrating. What's wrong with this guy? But it has nothing to do with the player. I think we created a little bit of a Pandora's box situation with the way the transfer portal has been handled in this past decade. I mean, it was pretty clear before then that had to be extenuating circumstances. Almost every player that transferred sat out a year, and it came with some bite to it. Now that's been removed, and you get this one-time pass of, you know, you commit to a school, the school's elated, and then, you know, for whatever reason, you're looking to part ways and move on and go on to the next place. So don't take issue with the kid. Take issue with the way the system is currently set up. And the lack of clarity therein, I think they're trying to progress to make it a little bit clearer in this one-time transfer pass situation, because, you know, you look back to the Tate Martell, Justin Fields days, and either they're trying to trump up and gin up these grievances that may or may not have existed just to get immediate eligibility, whereas some players, I can't think of the tight end's name, who transferred back and, you know, he seemed like he had a pretty good case to receive eligibility but didn't, and that's got to be frustrating for the player. I mean, it was, Luke Ford, there you go. Just difficult, and now they're trying to create clarity. But I think it's something to keep in perspective is these players aren't commodities. I mean, you're talking about a 19, 20-year-old young man who's trying to make decisions that put him in a position to be successful in his future. So if it takes a little bit longer for him to find a clear path that leads to success for him, I'm sorry, fans, that it doesn't fit into your off-season schedule, but you know, that's a big decision. I think all these decisions for these young student athletes are important to make and to really weigh heavily, and not just based on how the wind blows in that current day.
John, I think that's really well said. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia today. Really appreciate you being a part of the program, and hope you have a great week, and I look forward to speaking to you next week as well.
Always a pleasure. Go Dogs.
Good stuff, John.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I think John's exactly right about that. And for what it's worth, you know, Kirby Smart has not, to this point, been hypocritical on this really at all. You know, Smart has even knowing that the Rick Gilbert transfer was maybe a possibility, and maybe he could have landed in Georgia, you know, there's never been a point in which Smart has started arguing in favor of, you know, kind of ending the ban on immediate eligibility for intra-conference transfers. Smart hasn't really done that. And obviously, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, I've said before that I don't think that, you know, just kind of getting rid of this rule is necessarily a good thing. So there are some people, maybe, you know, less trained ears, who may listen to my own voice and say, well, BA, it sounds like you're being hypocritical in all of this. And I don't believe that I am. I actually like the rule. The idea that the coaches, the programs, the players, when it comes to their own teammates, have some certainty from year to year who's going to be with them. And the idea that you could be on this one team one year and then playing against that same team a year later, you know, that's a level of chaos around college football that I think has the potential to be a problem. So if Gilbert wanted to come to Georgia and Georgia wanted Gilbert to come here and the SEC stepped in and said, well, you can do that, but you can't be immediately eligible, I'd actually be fine with that as long as that's the rule that stays in place for everybody else. What I don't want is, yeah, Cade Mays, you can leave Georgia and go play against Georgia. You know, Otis Reeks, you can leave Georgia and go eventually get a chance to play at Ole Miss. You know, and then, but Rick Gilbert, you're going to, you know, go somewhere and not be able to do that. What I don't want is some sort of, you know, inconsistent enforcement of the rule. That's what I don't want. I actually kind of like the rule. I'm not quite so sure it's a bad thing, even in the case of Rick Gilbert, a player that I'd like to see at Georgia, obviously, as a fan. But one way or another, you just want some sort of level of consistency related to all of this. All right, let's get ready to do our SEC through here. Let me also give a quick shout-out to my friends here for a moment. Want to make sure that you're aware that Merriweather and Tharp, great, great friends of ours here at Dog Nation, your source for Georgia divorce. Here's the one thing you need to know. Listen, if you can't save your marriage, you probably should. But life is too short to not make the decision to move forward in a way that's going to make you whole again, make you happy again. And if it's time for you to do that, then trust my friends at Merriweather and Tharp in terms of really making sure that you put yourself in a position to enjoy the years that you have coming up, the next season of your life. This can be a chance to do that. Your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. Ton of free resources, podcast posts, blogs, everything else. A chance to have an initial consultation with one of their attorneys, and then let them go to work for you in getting you everything you deserve in what is obviously a tricky situation. But they've been through situations like this before. They can provide expertise for you. Find them online, theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, some SEC through stuff here for a moment. Let me start with this. This is also Gilbert related. The whisper campaign against players like Gilbert, once they do something that's a little bit unorthodox, I just find to be totally distasteful. And you've seen some of this if you've been on the internet at all. When Gilbert leaves LSU, commits to Florida, decides he doesn't want to go there, all of a sudden there's this, oh boy, there's a lot going on behind the scenes here. There is nothing grosser to me than the sort of media voice that's, I know something you don't know, but I can't tell you what it is, but just trust me, this is a messy situation. Yeah, I'll show you this from at, let's go back to the at Gator Dave on Twitter. Now, I'm not picking on this guy in particular, but it's just kind of a composite of what you see a lot of. This guy's got like 13,000 followers. This is not an insignificant tweet. He says, a lot of stuff behind the scenes going on with Gilbert. Personally for him, that doesn't really need to be out there. A decommit's not too surprising. You cannot have it both ways on this. The passive-aggressive thing of, listen, there's a lot going on with Gilbert. It just doesn't need to be out in the public. And you can go to any Florida message board. You can see a thousand different versions of this right now. We all know what you're doing. We get what this is. You're not as cute as you think you are. The day after the decommitment, honestly, this decommitment's just not that surprising. And listen, I'm not picking on the one guy that I just showed on the screen there, because honestly, all he really is a composite of what you see other places. Yes, there have been reputable reporters who've been willing to put their name to the idea that Gilbert's issues, if he has any, maybe related to academics. And maybe that's true. Reputable outlets, including 24/7 Sports, have had reporters mention that on their own forums, that maybe, you know, Gilbert's dealing with a little bit of an academic issue. Obviously, the rumor mill has been kind of saying that there for a while. If you want to put your name to that and run with that, by all means. But this whisper campaign of, listen, academics may just be the tip of the iceberg in all of this. Listen, if it's true, then report it. But if you're not willing to write it, then how true is it really? That's what I would guess I'd be left to wonder there. And I think that a Rick Gilbert or any other recruit deserves a lot better than that, than the kind of propaganda campaigns that seem to show up. And by the way, the Georgia folks aren't immune to this either. The Georgia side of this has not been hands clean on all of this forever. But it just sort of seems like when there's bad news for a certain SEC school, you know, certain people kind of, you know, get busy trying to explain why the news is not quite as bad as it seems like it is. And the player, or in many cases the recruit involved, ends up getting sort of, you know, semi-slandered. The fact of the matter is, the imagination of fans is in many cases far worse than what any kind of tangible reporting would ever be. All I'm saying is, how about we have a degree of fairness? And to me, the definition of fair is, if it's not something you're willing to attach your name to and report specifically on the record, then it's probably best not to even mention it there at all. Couple more things here. Interesting to see Harrison Bailey, a Tennessee quarterback, who admittedly I wasn't even so sure was even planning on staying at Tennessee based on some of the things that he once tweeted a few weeks ago related to Jeremy Pruitt. He's out there pitching for a Rick Gilbert to come join him there at Tennessee. Of course, Tennessee's been involved with the recruitment of Gilbert before. Darnell Washington as well. They were kind of involved in his recruitment. Maybe the NCAA says too involved. But nonetheless, that's kind of out there. I saw where Bailey put it out there on Twitter. Said, come and ball. He calls him family. Obviously, Bailey and Gilbert played together at Marietta High School. So pretty clearly, as this moves forward, Georgia may not be the only SEC school that kind of gets involved in this discussion here on that. So we'll obviously follow that, see where it goes. Finally, there's this, and this is kind of away from the Rick Gilbert storyline. Very interesting to see a couple of big-time quarterbacks make their announcement over the weekend and the reaction that it drew from SEC fan bases. As we said on Friday's show, Ty Simpson was kind of expected to pick Alabama, the five-star, but given the fact that he hails from Tennessee, this was obviously one that Tennessee fans were watching pretty closely. There was even some Florida chatter on this of why is it that Florida's kind of never involved with these big-time quarterbacks? Simpson, who was kind of thought to be choosing Alabama over Clemson, with Tennessee probably no better than bronze medal there for their in-state guy. But then there was Sam Horn, who was kind of thought to be, and Sam Horn's a four-star guy from just in the north part of Gwinnett County at Collins Hill High School, who made his decision over the weekend and chose Missouri. And that has really gotten some fan bases kind of up in arms, even though I think there had been some chatter connecting Horn and Missouri there for a while. But you've got, you know, Josh Heupel, quarterback-minded, former quarterback himself, offensive-minded head coach of Tennessee. Dan Mullen, supposed quarterback whisperer there at Florida. How is Eli Drinkwitz sliding into the SEC 1 year in and already pulling a quarterback the caliber of Horn, top 100 recruit in the country, not to be confused with the former Boston Red Sox designated hitter, although shout out to his 1988 Fleer rookie card. The point is, that's a different Sam Horn. But how are these schools that supposedly have these quarterback-friendly coaches like Heupel and Mullen, how are they letting a guy like Eli Drinkwitz slide in and take Horn out of the Atlanta area like it's no big deal whatsoever? Tough look for Tennessee and Florida on that, and some very interesting recruiting movements there in the SEC. By the way, for Bama, rich just get richer as they stack Ty Simpson to go on top of all of the recent recruiting success they have enjoyed. We'll make that your SEC through. As we wrap up today, Gatorhater roll call. This may be my favorite golden shoe we've ever done. It comes via our buddy Jermaine King, who's a very active member of our Dog Nation social community. And probably the favorite photograph of me that's ever been taken is me standing on the field, 50-yard line at the Rose Bowl, holding one of the roses up, and I'm holding up what we call a field edition. It's basically a newspaper, the big headline that says, you know, that Georgia has beaten Oklahoma. Well, Jermaine King says, I'm sending this to you, then I'm going to sleep. He's replaced the newspaper I was holding that said Georgia won the Rose Bowl with the the Dog Nation Facebook headline for Rick Gilbert decommitting from Florida, and then he's got a little bit of his own breaking news graphic down there at the bottom. This is so funny. Makes me so happy. Jermaine King, very well done on that. Congratulations for you being the Golden Shoe winner for today. By the way, how about Gator Hater Countdown? 243 days from now, Georgia gets some big-time revenge on those lousy, stinking Gators. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window & Door.